Testing. Blah, 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 blah. Ready, set, go.
It's time for the Coach Amy and Coach Liz Show,
a podcast for endurance athletes by two athletes, two coaches, and a physical therapist.
We are your hosts, Coach Amy
and Coach Liz,
coming to you from
Kansas City.
Welcome back, peeps. We're here for another episode of the Coach Amy and Coach Liz Show. And today's topic is going to be about our mind and how it affects our training. But we're going to go through a little exercise that we went through at a seminar that I attended recently that Liz hosted with for her Reds, but also anybody else who was interested. And it was a good exercise for the mind, and it was this internal family systems. Do you want to give us a really quick plug for that?
Yeah, so internal family systems is a type of therapy, and it has actually nothing, I just want to clarify what it's not. So it has nothing to do with your family as in terms of like your family of origin or where you grew up. I like to think of it as actually like internal family systems as like kind of the family system that's in your head, all of the different voices that are in your head, and learning to really deal with those. And all of those little voices are called parts. So we have different parts within our brain that we learn to deal with. And it's just a type of therapy that helps us access those different parts and voices that are telling us, just important information about our life.
Yes, I love it. And in this process, you get to have a conversation with those parts. Mm-hmm. So your true inner self gets to communicate with these parts to help you work through some things. And one of the things I think that people, a lot of endurance athletes deal with is the sort of anticipation or choosing a goal, going through that training, and then showing up on race day and going ahead and allowing yourself to do it. Okay. We're going to go through an example truly of mine that we're going to share. So when we sat and through this meditation process, at this seminar,
I know a gentleman who's an IFS therapist here in Kansas City, and I brought him in to walk my athletes through a process of kind of getting to know some of the parts in order to improve your mental strength and the ability to deal with doubt and that sort of stuff around training and racing.
Yes.
And so this clinic that we attended, he did that with a group. And what we're going to review here is what your experience was with your part.
Yes, we're going to go through exactly what was going on in my mind at the time, because I think it will be valuable. I've noticed I told a few patients of mine this week, and it really piqued their interest about it. And so you can see how, everyone can see here how it's not easy, but it's simple.
It is not easy.
Yeah, not easy. But simple. The process is
accessible.
It's doable. Yes, it's very, very doable. And I love that about it. And if you are curious about internal family systems, if you have seen the Disney movie Inside Out 1 or 2, that is really helpful. If you're at all interested in that, it gives you such a visual.
Well, that
of
movie
this.
Was based on internal family systems.
Yes. And so it gives you a good sort of visual of what's going on here. Okay. So should we do it?
Well, sure.
Okay. So the first thing he had us do is a meditation. And, you know, for me, meditation means like closing my eyes. Some people, they don't, that's not their thing. But so I closed my eyes, and he asked a good question.
Well, and I want to emphasize that a really important part of this is the listening.
Mm.
Right? Because those, the internal thoughts and like the emotions and the feelings that come up around something like this are all within us.
Mm-hmm.
And it's the listening. So that's why the meditation, and it's, you know, meditation I think throws people off, but sitting very quietly and just kind of letting whatever is there come to the surface, and like that's what you work with, right?
Yeah. And for me, like closing my eyes and shutting out other distractions was really helpful.
Sure. And that's how we started the group. So everybody just kind of got to take a few minutes and, you know, quietly sit there and just sort of see what came to the surface that you wanted to work with And that is telling you what you need to know right there. So you're not going to do it wrong. And if nothing comes to the surface, that's not wrong either. But yeah. That's the beauty of it. You're not going to do it wrong.
Yeah. So.
So he started the meditation. And so tell us, you know, what was, like, what came up for you? And what was your, where did that start for you when you had some quiet moments to listen?
So the part or voice that was speaking to me that I centered in on, the name of it was perfection. Mm-hmm. This, you have to be perfect.
Mm-hmm. And so that just kind of is, that's what came to the surface.
It is. Okay. And I don't know why that was the thing that came up first, but that's just what did. Oh no, Lisa, she knows why, she's going to analyze it.
I can see that. I mean, I feel like we see that in how you function, and I can see that from the outside with, like, and so it doesn't surprise me.
It doesn't surprise you, but it surprised me. Yeah.
Which is so interesting.
Right? Like, it was probably a really good idea. And it was a really good idea because...
And explain how that came to you, because for some people, it's like, you know, it's not like you hear voices, but, like, it's just a thought that floats up, or maybe it's a sensation in the body, or some people see colors, or they may see an image. So it can come in a lot of different ways. So how did that float to the surface
for you? It was extremely visual. And what popped up was a dark red, almost purple sphere. And I got to thinking about it later, and it was like, oh, you know what? That is the, when you're weather, you know, my thing about weather, you know, the dark red and purple is storm, heavy rainfall, hail, storm.
And did you see that? Like, was it a sensation that was like, by your head? Did you feel it with somewhere within your body? Yes. Where was it?
My jaw.
It was in your jaw. So you sort of
immediately felt tightness and pressure in my jaw. Mm-hmm. Yep. And then...
And did you feel like there was, like, could you sort of see that the color sensation around the jaw area there? So it was like a tightening in the color? I didn't.
Nope. It was just, there was a separate sensation in my jaw, and then there was this visual with my eyes closed of that sort of sphere.
Okay.
And it was kind of throbbing.
Okay.
And, like, pulsating. And then he asked questions. It changed a bit.
So it becomes sort of a guided meditation.
Yeah.
And so at this point, he's asked you to see what comes to the surface, and you feel your jaw tightening, and you're having sort of this red purple vision in front of you,
mm-hmm.
You know, at least within your mind. And then, you know, he would just ask questions like, who are you? Like, so when you ask this vision, like, who are you? What came up?
Yeah. She said perfection. I'm perfection.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And did you have any response to that? Like, was it like, oh, like an acknowledgement? Was there any response to, like, understanding that that's what you were seeing?
I think it was like, oh, hello.
Oh, you, I know you. Chestnut.
You've
been lurking in my brain for decades.
I know you. Hello. Yeah.
A raising consciousness, mm-hmm. a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
and so then, you know, it was really fascinating the way he did it, but he... So you ask this part questions, and you just kind of listen to what they say. And so something like, how old did this part, how old was the part? Could the part tell you how old she was?
You know, I didn't ask that question at the time.
But did you ask it how old it thought you were?
Yes. And later when I got home, because it actually didn't talk about that question during the meditation process for us at that moment, but... Later on, I did some more work when I got home.
So you engage with this part and you're dialoguing. So that now at this point, you're asking this part, this image, these feelings, how old it thinks you are right now in your life.
Yes. And she thinks I'm 5.
Right. And so
she thinks I'm 5 years old.
So I want to back up for a second, because that's significant. And the reason that is significant is because parts develop out of experiences that we have in our life.
Mm-hmm.
And you kind of get trapped in that moment because our brains can't tell time. So if something happens to you, and it can be something that's very significant and traumatic, or it can be something that seems very insignificant but happens to land on somebody in a way that feels traumatic to the person at that time. And then you have what they call in internal family systems, like a wound.
Mm-hmm.
And from that, and so it's this place where it's like suddenly for a reason, your body feels the need to protect against something that happens. And so that you know, when you're asking that part, how old do you think I am at this time? It's quite possible that what something happened when you were five that kind of started that need for you to put up that protective barrier. And so it's interesting because you go back and you're finding those little nuggets in time where you may have had like something that happened that landed on your nervous system in a way that made your nervous system feel like it needed to protect you. And so then from that, your behavior patterns start to kind of grow. And so here, maybe we don't know. I mean,
I do know. I can tell you right now exactly what happened.
Well, go ahead.
So, you know, I grew up parents that wanted to, you know, you're great. Good job. You know, positive reinforcement. And so I grew up feeling like I could do no wrong. I was great. I'm really good at everything. I'm smart. Blah, blah, blah. But when I went to kindergarten and I was about 5 years old, and it was my first experience with, no, you're not doing it right. So we were writing our letters, and the letter C, my C's weren't perfect. They needed work. And my name is spelled A-M-Y, and I wrote my Y's backwards. And it was very difficult for me to correct that. It was pointed out that I was doing it wrong. But up until that time, I was perfect. And so it was a moment in my life where I realized I am not perfect. I have to work on something. And I worked on it and worked on it. My mom tells the story about how I just did not stop until I got it right, which that's part of my personality. I wanted to get it right. But that was a moment in time that I think I discovered that I could do wrong. I could make mistakes. So that's why I think perfection thinks that's my age.
I mean, did once you sort of acknowledged that and then you had a memory that came up with it specifically, did that change then how you felt about, like, that part?
Right. Yes. So when we were going through that guided imagery with Dan, just in chronological order, that sort of how old are you question, I processed that at home later because I knew, oh, that was one of the questions we should ask. But during the meditation, the question that really had me interacting with the part was the question to ask, well, what are you doing for me? My question to perfection was, well, how are you helping me? What are you trying to achieve? What is your role for me?
Right. And that there's the important thing about parts is that their intentions are always good. Their intentions are always to protect us. The outcome is not always good.
Right. And there is a good outcome from perfection. But I asked perfection, like, what is that you're trying to do? Well, I want you to be successful at what you do. I want you to be great at what you do. Oh, that's nice. That's a good thing to strive for. I like that I have perfection on my side, helping me to strive to be better at what I do. It's why I have to do so much research before I'll buy a certain thing for the clinic, a certain tool or method, or I have to learn. But it's exhausting. I mean, it causes anxiety, and there's a lot of fear that gets wrapped up into it. but that's her role. Her role is to make me the best that I can be, In all reality, she pushes me to be, you know, that I have to be 100% perfect. Mm-hmm. So what the fallout from that can be is choosing not to do something because I'm afraid I'm going to fail. Mm-hmm. Done that many times in my life. Downgraded my goal hugely because I was afraid I was going to fail and not meet my goal. So I changed it and altered it. Extreme amount of stress and anxiety that occurs because when I do choose to do something and I bite it off and I want it bad enough, I will strive for that perfection and it can nearly grind me into the ground. Mm-hmm. I don't know how anyone remained my friend in PT school. Honestly, I don't know. I was a basket case, cray cray. Mm-hmm. I mean, I would read a textbook from front to back before the first test. Mm-hmm. Just silly stuff like that. Like, I didn't need to do that, right? And I think back and I was, boy, I wish I would have enjoyed. There was parts of PT school that I absolutely enjoyed and love and think back fondly on. But I kind of wish I could go back to that self and say, right, wow, wouldn't it have been nice if you could have had a conversation with perfection back then?
Yeah.
Because you probably would have had a lot more joy out of the process and realistic expectations.
Yes.
But bringing it home to sort of like endurance, that, you know, when I asked you to help me train for the triathlon, you were, one of the comments that you said, you're very coachable, because I would do every single workout. Mm-hmm. And it was like, I'm deciding to do this thing. I'm all in. I'm going to do it 100%. Well, by the end, and huge successful outcome. Mm-hmm. I'm very happy and proud of that outcome. But I, you know, how many years has it been now? 3 years to recover from that effort. Because it was so much stress around it. It was a good kind of stress, but also a little bit too much.
I mean, and that's where, I mean, it's like the emotion, it's the emotional stress. And it's, mm-hmm. you know, even if you're building in recovery blocks as an athlete.
Right.
If you,
the physical part was perfect.
Exactly. Yes. It's like, and that's where, I mean, I think, and that's why we brought this guy in to do this clinic. Because that drive is that I have seen that crush many athletes. Mm-hmm. And it's, you know, because you start one, you never can really recover. And, you know, there's so much more that's coming out now about like the impact of stress on the body and how it's impeding recovery and how it leads to disease. And I mean, it's really, stress in and of itself, in my opinion, is a disease. Mm-hmm. And so you add that into you're trying to recover from endurance sports. And then on top of that, you know, people think they are training for an event, but what they're training for is perfection. And that drives the decisions they make about how hard to push or being relentless and never resting or, you know, tearing themselves down when they're out there. And it's not, you're not training for the event. You're training because you're managing your fear. You're like, you're training to get away from something or to like prove that you're going to be okay because you can be perfect. And it's a really sneaky part of the endurance athlete's makeup, and it's a real problem, and I see it manifest in a lot of different ways. And the reason I brought this guy in is because if you want to change your behaviors around training, you have to get to some of the things like this. And you know, being perfect in an endurance athlete setting is often, it's not just that setting, right? Mm-hmm. It's in every area of the life, mm-hmm. right? And so you can't just get in and be like, tell someone in their endurance sport, well, you know, maybe you could adjust your goals, or maybe you could let your body rest because you don't seem to be able to heal, or, you know, these things, because it's not about the athletic endeavor. Mm-hmm. They're managing all of the things that have come from life, and managing like that training is an outlet, mm-hmm. right? And so it's really, if you want to really tackle athletic performance, it is really about so much more than the training and mm-hmm. racing itself.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So the way I'll see it manifest with my athletes is suddenly downgrading the goal. I'm just going to go do it for fun. Even though they're physically prepared, they're mentally just not. They're afraid. There's a fear. I'm not going to be able to do it. They can't trust the training. That stuff, that is that. And it, for them, it might not be perfection. It might be anxiety. It might be another part that they need to handle. But for me, personally, it's perfection.
Yeah.
And so one of the questions you asked a little bit ago was, well, what was your conversation back? What did you tell perfection? And so what I said to perfection was like, I get what your role is. I understand what you're doing for me. Thank you. Thank you, because I do want to be the best I can be. I do want to be great at what I do, but I don't have to be perfect.
You don't.
And I never have to be perfect. Mm-mm. And you can step back a little bit. I've got this. I'm 54 years old. I've had success. Mm-hmm. I'm okay. Mm-hmm. And the color from red to purple went as through my conversation back and forth with her, became green, and then this bright, beautiful robin's egg, like the sky color blue, which is my favorite color.
So interesting.
And there was absolutely no tension in my jaw. And I mean, that meditation, how long was it? It took us like 15 minutes, maybe, at the most.
Yeah.
I don't know. Amazing. I had no sense of time during it. But yeah. And now, am I never going to need to converse with perfection again? You know, Dan pointed out, maybe not, but probably you might. Mm-hmm. It'll come up again. It'll creep back and say, oh, let me take over. Mm-hmm. And then you can, what he calls blend with that, have this conversation and let it know I'm okay. Mm-hmm. And so I thought it would be good to come, when I got back home, to continue to work on it. And having seen the two movies, Inside Out 1 and Inside Out 2, the characters or the parts are represented by these drawings or what is it?
Animation.
Not just a drawing, okay? An animation. But I thought, all right, well, what does my... I'm a very visual person. So I was like, well, what does my... what does perfection look like? And I thought, oh, maybe I'll get it out and draw it. And then I was like, oh, no, you know what? Immediately it came to me that I know what she looks like. And she looks like Audrey Hepburn in Breakfast at Tiffany's, okay? And I was like, well, why? Oh, is it just because she's perfectly dressed? Oh, no, it's a lot deeper than that. Guess who looked like Audrey Hepburn from Breakfast at Tiffany's? Can you guess who?
I mean, somebody. And like, what, you? I mean,
my mom.
Your mom.
When I was growing up, my mom looked just like that. And my parents, but especially my mom. And this is the part where I feel like, oh gosh, I'm going to break down crying. Oh, wait, you know, she didn't coddle me by any means. My parents weren't like coddling in any way, but there was definitely, and I wouldn't say excessive pressure, because I've seen families with a lot of undue pressure on their kids in sports and stuff. But I was just always given this sense of just because you're a girl doesn't mean you can't do blah, blah, blah. And they wanted to set up that environment for me. And I definitely felt that. And I think, you know, that whole you can't do wrong, you can be perfect, kind of bloomed from that a little bit.
You wanted
and
to
that's
rise
not
to
a negative
occasion.
Thing. Yes, I wanted to rise to the occasion. So it's not like I'm not saying, oh, my parents gave me this perfect part. Yeah. That's not at all what I'm saying. I think that's why it manifests that
Which
way
is
for
so
me.
Interesting. It's so interesting to learn where they come from and like what they're telling you. And you know, they have a job to help, and sometimes it gets, you know, a lot of control, and the consequences of their help aren't always great, but you know, they are there to help. And so unearthing that is, you know, it's just really, it's fascinating.
Yeah. So if you guys want to learn more about this, there is a very approachable book for, and it's called
No Bad Parts by Dick Schwartz, who founded IFS.
Is it Mark Schwartz or Dick Schwartz?
Dick Schwartz.
Oh,
what did
okay.
I say?
You said Dick Schwartz, but That's I thought Dick it was Schwartz. Mark. Okay, could we be a little bit more confusing? Sorry, I'll shut my mouth about that now. But we'll have a link in the show notes for you guys if you are interested in uncovering that. I know I'm going to get that book, and once I've read it, I'll put it in the waiting area at the
and then those two
PT
Disney
clinic.
Movies.
Oh yeah,
one and two.
Oh, I mean that is your must do homework.
Yeah,
they're very good, and maybe grab a tissue box.
I know. Thanks so much for listening. And remember,
we are in this together. Until next time.